This is The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm Mary Beth Maziarz.
Joining us in the studio this morning is our friend and local parkite, Chris Waddell. Now, you may have seen Chris as one of the NBC hosts covering the recent Paralympics in Milan Cortina, and he's looking forward to changes and fun opportunities when the games come back here in 2034. Chris is going to join us to talk about all kinds of things, including his new initiative called Name Tags that he's bringing to schools. Chris, welcome. So happy to see you.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here. And, and what a spectacular morning. So thank you for letting me join you.
That's beautiful. There's nothing quite like sitting in the live studio here at KPCW and looking out over Old Town, is there?
It really is, and especially at this time of the morning, too, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's really nobody here. It's kind of fun.
It is. Especially, and as the ski season kind of winds down, it feels like it's our town again, doesn't it? Like it kind of comes back to feeling like the old days.
That's right. Okay, well, you are back from, it wasn't so recent now, it's been a month or so back from Italy. What a great place.
I was not in Italy. I was hosting in Stamford, Connecticut, about Italy.
Right.
So I was able to get up at 1:30 every morning to get into the studio.
That's perfect. I love how they set that up for you.
It's very nice. There were actually some people who preceded me who were there earlier for like the 1 o'clock production meetings. Luckily, I wasn't there for that.
Wow. So is that how it goes with nearly all of the NBC hosts? I suppose it depends on what you're doing, but how interesting that you're not there, but explain all of that.
There are more people on site during the Olympics than there are in the Paralympics, but it's still a lot of the Olympic coverage is from Connecticut as well, because everything's there. All the cameras are there, all the producers are there. You know, when you move one person that you see on television there, then you bring a whole lot of other people. And so it just gets more expensive and more challenging as far as the technology is concerned. I did go over, my wife and I went over to Cortina in December, so before the holidays, and got on the hill a little bit. They were still making snow. I mean, they kind of had a similar winter to the one that we had, in that the middle of the downhill was open, but the top wasn't, the bottom wasn't. But got to see that. I do opening ceremony as well. So I went from Cortina and kind of did this part of my own. My wife went back and I went to Cortina, which is obviously, you know, the city of love, right? This is Romeo and Juliet. And it was, our opening was in a 2,000-year-old arena that's like the Colosseum.
Oh my gosh.
In Rome. And it's actually a working Colosseum too. So they continue to have opera in there. They continue to have plays in there. It was a pretty amazing place. So to get there and to be able to see what's going on, because television in some ways is two dimensional. So to know that, you know, like, you know, that Juliet's balcony is just a few hundred yards away from where the arena was, to see that. And then I went to Milan and spent some time in Milan as well. So I felt like, for me, it was good to get hands-on, and then it made it different when I was actually commenting on it.
Yeah, it would seem really important to do that. Most of the hosts that host from Connecticut have that opportunity? It just seems so imperative to really get that feel.
Some do and some don't, really. And I mean, like, the big people will. I know that, like, Mike Tirico was there in, you know, in Milan Cortina when he was broadcasting, but he also went over and got a little bit of a tour. And, you know, it's just nice to have the feel, the temperature of the room kind of thing of what's going on, you know, so that was helpful. So I kind of did that just on my own, and it was a nice little trip as well for us. And yeah.
Well, I'm so happy to see more coverage. Yeah. When we were talking about this, that even 15 years ago, it was just like 3 hours total of coverage, and now there's so much coverage. That must be very heartening.
It's really heartening, because you're not just an individual. You get to be a group. There's a leverage to your story. It really is, you know, when I look at it, because London in 2012 was about 3 hours of coverage on NBC. And it's grown bigger and bigger. My first games with them was in Sochi in 2014. And now it's thousands of hours, and people can see all of the events. They can see the people that they want to see. It's not just sort of packaged in one sort of prepackaged highlight reel.
Yeah.
And so it's the real race that's going on, or it's the real curling event that's going on, which was one of the bigger events really over there. it was really good. And so, yeah, so I look at that because it's 15% of the population, the people with disabilities, you know, people with physical disabilities. But in a lot of ways, it's an invisible part of our population, because from the time we're little, we're taught not to stare at someone who looks different.
Yeah.
And this is a chance to stare, and not only stare, but a chance to see yourself and, you know, become the protagonist in this competition and say, you know, I want to be that person who is perfecting my craft, who is looking at whatever difficulties I have and trying to figure out a way to perfect that craft. Because, I mean, it's the same thing for all of us, right? Yeah. I mean, we all have our challenges that we're facing, and it's just this is in a little bit more heightened way that you're getting to see it, but I think you're getting to see yourself. And I think hopefully it changes the narrative. Like if you see somebody on the street or something, it's not like, oh, that's too bad, what happened to you? It's like, well, what do you do?
Yeah.
You know, and changes interviews, you know, the interviewing process and the employment process. And I think that it really can be a big fulcrum to create far greater change.
And it also is kind of a shift in a movement. Sometimes I feel like people, they're not trying to be patronizing, but they're like, oh, someone's so heroic with a disability just for surviving. Where there are people with every kind of ability level, these are folks working at the top of their field. They're being heroes in the athletic, heroic way, that doing things I could never do as a person who is fully able-bodied at the moment. And I just love to see that being celebrated at this whole other level.
And I think what you're talking about in a lot of ways is an entree into the conversation, a way to connect, because oftentimes we're seeing what's different about us.
Yeah.
But we don't understand what we share, you know, because, I mean, you're saying the things that you couldn't do, but I've also heard you sing, Mary Beth. And, you know,
I mean, I can do that.
This is a really similar path that we're talking about, of trying to figure out how we can continue to grow, how we can continue to get better, how we can get over ourselves to perform in the way that we really have prepared, which is a little bit difficult for all of us.
So true. Well, Chris, you were a Paralympian, an alpine skier, and I'm wondering, it's funny because the Olympic sports are so vast, and it sounds like you followed curling. People fall in love with curling.
Oh, my God. I think I might want to become a curler.
I didn't watch any of it, but I really missed out.
It is a hoot.
But I'm wondering how you identify, who you identify with. You know, who are the standouts for you, maybe first as an alpine skier, and then secondly, just overall? I ask you this with a lead in to, I was geeking out on Oksana Masters because she's amazing cross country skier and biathlete, just amazing.
Yeah, so on the alpine side, going in, Andrew Kirka was really the focus. Andrew Kirka is a guy in Beijing. He was warming up. There were these huge gusts of wind on the mountain when they were warming up, and got blown out of his training course into the fencing, into the net. Broke bones in his thumb, in his shoulder. But he didn't stop. I mean, this is the amazing part. He went back up and he took his downhill run with broken bones, and was eight hundredths out of third place, 800s off the podium.
Oh, my gosh.
And then they found out what had actually happened to him and sent him home, and so he didn't compete anymore. So this is that moment of redemption in a lot of ways, where you look at it and go, okay, he showed up. He won a medal, as a bronze in the Super G.
Mm-hmm.
And it was great to see that redemption, to see him put it on the line. It was his last games. He's kind of looking toward the future. He has a B&B up in Alaska where he's bringing people, you know, which is, I asked him, is middle of nowhere? He said, no, not middle of nowhere. I'm 10 minutes from the middle of nowhere. You know, and it's like, but he's bringing, like, bring people with disabilities out and getting them onto, you know, out fishing, getting them hunting, touring, you know, out in kayaks and different things like that. And obviously, if you've been to Alaska, it's absolutely spectacular, and bring them to spectacular places. So it was great to see him finish his career and have momentum into his next career. Patrick Hallgren was an amazing star. I mean, he was
kind of the you of the moment.
I don't know. I never had this kind of a personality. I mean, he was there with the leopard print and the and the tie-dyed ponytails, but he showed up the day of the Super G. I mean, this is one of those, like, this is what happens at big events sometimes, is you see somebody who really hasn't been in the running show up and go, and he was second place to Robin Koosh, who's the nephew of Didier Koosh.
Oh.
Yeah, which is kind of an interesting thing. Robin and Didier actually are tied in World Cup victories. They both have 21 World Cup victories.
Amazing.
Which is
kind
of cool. Wow. And Patrick just showed up, and then he was like the greatest ambassador within Cortina. He had his medal on him everywhere. I think he might have met everybody in the village of Cortina.
Aww.
Or maybe they met him. I'm not sure exactly how that was all working, but it was amazing to see redemption on the snowboarding side. Noah Elliott. So Noah Elliott's a guy who came here from St. Louis. He was on the verge of becoming a professional skateboarder in St. Louis. 15 years old, cancer, ended up spending a year in the hospital, lost his leg. Came back and went to a camp where he met Brenna Huckabee, who's also on the U.S. team and has been a phenomenal athlete. Met her, saw this snowboarding thing, and he went, hey, you know, like, I've got a competitive advantage here. This snowboarding's way easier because your feet are actually strapped to the board. You know, it's not like skateboarding where they're not. And he had all this skill and brought it to it. He came here and he said in 18 months, so from the time he was here until Pyeongchang, he had to win a gold medal in Pyeongchang to be able to bring his daughter out, because his daughter was staying with his parents. And he came out and went through the NAC, got a job here, and he went and won a gold and a bronze in Pyeongchang. He was the guy to beat, and he's the guy, in some ways, some of his competitors say, he's kind of my hero, you know, possibly sotto voce, but not really, you know, in a lot of ways. But he in Beijing, his femur. So this happens with some of the amputees. His femur, the bone, was actually poking through his skin.
No.
So he's competing like this. They ended up having to go in and do surgery and take a couple of inches off of his femur and sort of resuture him. So I can imagine the kind of pain.
Wow.
He ended up fourth in the border cross in Beijing. But this was a redemption games for him as well.
God.
And he went gold and silver in these games. And really in the bank slalom, he is the guy to beat. And it was amazing. He was able to share the podium in the bank slalom with Mike Schultz, who's the guy who builds the prosthetics that all of these athletes use.
Right.
So being above the knee amputee, it actually sort of helps to mimic what your leg would do. So there's a shock that actually resists some of those forces and helps you. And so so Mike is the guy building it. And so the two of them were able to share the podium together, which was amazing. You know, the cross country side, I mean, we'll get to Oksana, but Sydney Peterson, who's here, who's a PhD student at the U, you know, and I asked her one moment, I was like, so isn't that kind of hard, like balancing this whole being a PhD student and being a world-class athlete? And she's like, oh, I really can only ski for like 2 hours a day. It's not that hard.
Oh,
and I was like, and traveling around and doing it. And she was just absolutely phenomenal there.
Wow.
I mean, just amazing, just gold medals. And the Nordic team was really good. Jake Adikoff, who's the visually impaired athlete, had 4 gold medals. And between Oksana and Kendall,
right. Oh, my gosh.
I'd love to hear more of what you're doing at the moment. So I know that you've got a new program that's, well, maybe it's not completely new, but it's being expanded to go to schools. Could you tell us a little bit about it?
So our name tags program, and I gave both of you a name tag. Lynn has an orange one, and Mary Beth has a purple one. Just for those of you who are not on television, we're on radio. And so we're having to fill that in. And but our name tags program, I've been doing this actually since 2008. We started it when we were climbing Kilimanjaro, and we wanted to...
Oh, just when we were climbing Kilimanjaro, you know, as one does.
As one does, exactly. Well, there were a couple of things. So our mission with my foundation, with One Revolution, is to turn perception of disability upside down. I want people to see the individual, to see the potential, and not come in with the preconceived notion, right? And so we started going to schools because kids' minds are open. They want to ask they want to answer to the question that they have. Yeah. And they're not always politically correct.
Yeah, if they're given that permission, you could really make some headway.
You really can. And they accept it. I mean, this might be news. We get more jaded as we get older. And if it doesn't fit within our view of how life works, we don't necessarily accept. Kids look at it and they go, okay, I understand that. Mm-hmm. Like, this is good. And so it was a way to connect with the kids, to empower the kids. It was also a way to connect with an audience. Because we needed people to watch us when we were climbing Kilimanjaro. So we started doing this. I've done over 1,000 of them throughout the country, throughout the world. And what we're doing now with the games returning to Utah in 2034, in the last 3 years, we've made a big push in Utah. And we're really lucky we have the support of the Miller Foundation and of the Eccles Foundation. They've made it really easy for us to get into schools, to make it really affordable for schools so that the financial part is not a big deal. Because we charge $2,000 throughout the rest of the country, and it's only $200 here in Utah, which is really great. But what we're doing is we're bringing in Paralympic athletes to do this presentation. I've done a bunch of them, but the more athletes we can bring in, the more schools we can reach. We want to reach all of the schools in Utah. These games are not the Salt Lake games. These are the Utah games.
Right.
And you look at what 2/3 of our population is Provo, Salt Lake, Ogden. But there are a whole lot of people elsewhere that we have. So like I've done some in Vernal, some in Hilldale, in Rich County, which is right by Bear Lake there. And so it's kind of cool because some of these schools are like, well, people don't really come to visit us. But what it does is we're talking about empowering the students, you know, with being able to take a risk to figure out who they are.
Yeah.
You know, believing that, you know, because you see resilience in somebody else and you believe it a whole lot more in yourself, right? So this is one of the gifts that the Paralympic athletes are giving, but it's also an opportunity for the athletes to go and create fans.
Yeah.
They're connecting and they're like, well, that's my guy.
They're getting their deserved recognizability.
They really are, and they want to show up. And who knows? I mean, it also could be the inspiration that this child is saying, well, I'm going to be an Olympian or a Paralympian, because they're 8 years between now and the games, right? A lot of time to develop. But
right.
But what we're looking at is really just trying to reach all of the schools. And we want to reach all the schools. We want to get out there. We've been to a bunch of the schools in Park City. I think we need to come back to the schools in Park City. We've been talking to like Luke Bodensteiner over at Soldier Hollow. They did a really cool thing with gym class over in Heber and Midway, where they brought roller skis into all the gym classes and then brought the kids over to Soldier Hollow and got them on Nordic skis. And one of our athletes, Danny Erovich, is a Nordic skier. So we're trying to figure out how can we connect and build on what they've already done to really make a great impression on these students. And because it's tough being a student, isn't it? I mean, it's the idea of who you are, what you're all about. And so I gave you guys name tags, and I told you I'm not
blank
just
name tags.
Yeah, we're not just giving it. So yes, exactly. So what you need to do with these name tags is I want you to do two things. I want you to, not right now, but I want you to write down how you want people to see you. Because they might not see the genius inside of you, right? So how are you gonna grow this? How are you gonna develop it? And so the other part of it is, and this is an important part, is you've got to put this someplace that you will see it, so that you're actually reminded. Because we make these goals and dreams oftentimes in a place of comfort and go, this is what, and then we forget about it.
Yeah.
And it's like we need to be reminded. And so this is exactly what we tell the kids. It's like, put this someplace that you're going to see. I often tell them, you know, you can even put it on like the mirror in your bathroom and
that was what I was
brush
thinking.
Your teeth in the morning and go, that's the person I'm going to be. And then you can check it out later on in the day. And
are the kids looking for one word? Is it an adjective? Is it a noun? What is it? Is it a sentence? What am I wearing to the grocery store today with
Lynn,
my name tag?
Radio Goddess.
There we go.
So that would be a couple of words, which would be fine.
Okay.
I think the idea is to get it as small and memorable as it can be. You know, so that you actually
rock
remember it and
star.
Go.
Lynn Rockstar.
Yeah. That's
exactly it. Yeah. That's exactly it. Yeah. Billy Idol might have a problem with that, right? And from that commercial. But anyway.
Move on over, that's Billy.
Yeah, exactly. He had his time.
Exactly. Oh, I love it. Oh, and so have you found that kids, I mean, if we really think that there are no limits for us, and I love being, you know, a person with more decades under my belt than these school kids, just coming up with the most outrageous things that you know, you want to do, whatever it is. I mean, silly enough, the first year in my life, I've been a basketball fan. And that's not, you know, what I want to be, you know, that's not my goal in life.
Okay. But it's working.
I was just, it's working. Watch me go. I lost my basketball pool, you know, my bracket here, KPCW. I was the loser. But, you know, nevertheless.
I wanted to be a gymnast before I turned almost 6 feet tall. So there we go.
So,
we could be an aerialist, though.
Oh.
Those lines work well, you know. That's good.
Okay.
Yeah.
See?
But still, I doubt it.
And I mean, what do you see in the kids these days, you know, in terms of their creativity, their belief in themselves, their resilience, their ability to think big?
Yeah, I think it really is an ability to think big, because it's easy to imagine that what we see around us is life. And to limit ourselves, right? And I think that, you know, impossible is entirely true until somebody does it, right? And if we're not going to do it, and resilience is a component of that, you know, our motto is, it's not what happens to you, it's what you do with what happens to you. And we have the kids chant it throughout the whole, four times throughout, and we kind of do, you guys are old enough, you'll actually get this reference. It's sort of like the old Miller Lite commercial where it's like, tastes great, less filling kind of thing. So we break the room in half, and it's like, it's not what happens to you, it's what you do with what happens to you. I had a kid chase me down at the airport and chant our motto at the airport.
Oh, that must have been so gratifying.
It was great. And it had been 5 years since we'd been at his school.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, that gives me goosebumps.
And so you look at that, and it's like, it's something that they'll remember. Yeah. But the idea with this is that, you know, no matter who we are, things are going to go wrong.
Yeah.
And we're limited by our sense of creativity. We're limited by opportunities as well. You know, I mean, I think we create networks, we create opportunities for ourselves, and hopefully those continue to grow. But really, it's a matter of kind of showing up every day, showing up, trying to get a little bit better, continuing to have that belief. I feel like, for me, I was at my strongest, my most powerful after my accident, which sounds really strange, but it was kind of like I couldn't let any of those worries or insecurities or anxiety or any of those reasons that we quit in the middle of something. You know, you're writing a song in the first sentence, you get it in the first line, and you're like, okay, this isn't going to work. You know, and it's like, how often does that happen? But it's like, I felt like I had to stay in the fight, because if I didn't stay in the fight, I didn't know what life would be for me. So it gave me that single-minded focus. But, and I call it realizing possible, and it's like winning the moment with ourselves, is the idea of like, how can we stay in it? How can we continue to be optimistic when things go wrong? And sometimes that's our job, is just to maintain that sense of optimism, because then we can be more powerful later on.
100%.
Okay, we have got just like a minute left, and I'm holding a book that was written and illustrated by none other than Chris Waddell.
Woo!
Is it lonely to be a four-leaf clover? What is this about? And is this, you know, is so this your first book?
Is it, well, I actually did
children's
I did
book.
This book. So that was my first children's book. I did Things I Want to Remember Not to Forget, which is for children and adults. But the four-leaf clover book really, to me, follows the theme of name tags. It's about a four-leaf clover that's hiding what makes it different, which is also what makes it great, right?
Yeah.
That fourth leaf is locked,
that's what
right?
makes it special.
It really does. 1 in 10,000 is the ratio, supposedly,
really?
Which is why it's lucky,
wow.
right? And it's hiding it until it meets a dandelion, which doesn't
it's
hide.
It's pretty common.
Exactly. Well, my wife is a huge fan of dandelions, and actually, the dandelion made it into our wedding vows and all
Jean.
Of that. And I did this for her birthday, and so the dandelion is bold and fierce and grows where nothing else will grow, and allows you to flourish, right? And so this is what happens. I don't want to give away the whole story, but that's the setup, and then you'll have to go read the book. But we donate one of these to all of the schools that we go to.
Great. Chris Waddell, such a pleasure to see you again. We could really go on talking to you all hour.
We really could.
But we're going to talk to Ezekiel Emanuel about eating ice cream. So
that sounds good, too.
Thank you so much for joining
Thanks,
us.
Chris.
You're welcome, and thank you for letting me join you.